from Hawkinsville, New York. Welcome to the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show, coming to you from Nice.
Yes, coming up this week, we're asking how speeds at Unbound have gone up by a whopping 35% in just 10 years. And we didn't know, so we have asked two-time winner Ted King what's changed and whether now the spirit of gravel is officially dead.
Oh, what a question. I've also got a pretender to Mark Beaumont's throne as the round-the-world record holder, plus a teenage sensation who's winning more races than Remco Evenepoel was at the very same age, and how exercise can reduce your risk of dying from cancer by up to a third. This week in the world of cycling, we learned that Simon Yates has finally put the demons of the Colle della Finestre to bed, once and for all.
Absolutely. In 2018, you'll remember he completely capitulated on that mountain, losing all hope of winning the Giro d'Italia, having dominated the race for the previous, 2.5 weeks, This year, he rode up it 5 minutes faster than Chris Froome did that year, simultaneously riding to overall victory at the race he'd so cruelly lost 7 years before.
5 minutes is a lot, isn't it? Congrats too to Isaac Del Toro and Richard Carapaz. They made it a fantastic race over basically the entire 3 weeks, I would say, this year.
Congrats and commiserations too. And now we also learned that Dan here qualified for the UCI Gravel World Champs and that you lot are desperate to see him do it.
Yeah, desperate. More bloody bike riding for me, isn't it? I tell you what, if this show gets 10,000 likes, I'll agree to once again be peer pressured into doing a race. The World Champs, I guess, in this case. And I will train very hard all the way up to it. It's in mid-October.
We can definitely do that, can't we? Right, come on everyone, hit the like button. And you'll be pulling on a Team GB jersey for the first time since...
Good question. 2009 Mendrisio Elite World Championship.
There you go, 16 years ago.
I like it, that long. Finally this week, and this is incidental to my own result at the Gralic Gravel event, we learnt that gravel racing is getting insanely fast. It's breaking all kinds of speed records at the moment.
Proof came at Saturday's Unbound, which is the world's biggest, most prestigious, and is it the longest running gravel race?
I'd imagine
One of them, certainly, and it's held in Kansas in the USA.
So first up, we'll do a quick wrap up of the results from last Saturday. So New Zealand's Cameron Jones topped the first ever podium, which didn't feature a home rider in the men's race, whilst Carolina Migon of Poland won the women's. Both of them did it in solo fashion at the end of what is a 200-mile event, which is, 350 kilometres or something?
Yeah, in the XL event, which was 360 miles this year, Rob Britton beat Lachlan Morton in the men's race, whilst Heather Jackson won the women's in a time that put her eighth overall. She was an hour ahead of her nearest rival, Serena Gordon.
So well done to all of the winners, but not just the winners, I'd say. It's such a hard event, so well done to everybody who finished or even took part, which includes our very own Alex Payton.
Yes. Now, there will be a full video, of course, coming out soon with Alex's exploits at the race. We won't give his results here either, will we? But cover your ears if you don't want any spoilers at all.
I wonder how many people have covered their ears
at
this point. Anyway, he finished in just under 10 hours, which gave him an average speed of 20.33 miles per hour.
Yeah, for 200 miles.
For 200 miles on gravel.
Well, duh.
Well, yes, gravel race, isn't it? I was adding it for emphasis.
Right, okay, thanks,
And now what's really interesting is that whilst he finished about an hour and 20 minutes behind Jones, the winner, his time was quick enough to have won in 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019, and 2021. 2020 was cancelled, due to COVID.
Yeah, now this is what's known as a little bit of time trialers logic, isn't it? Comparing things in cycling that look comparable, but might not be. Like Andrew Feather, who can ride up Mont Ventoux as fast as Tadej Pogacar, and therefore extrapolating that he is as fast as Tadej Pogacar.
I've done similar extrapolations myself.
I bet you have, mate.
So we should caveat that slightly by pointing out as well that the obvious thing, that conditions are different each and every year, especially on gravel, and there are frequent changes to the course, despite it remaining the same distance and over what's basically the same terrain, I would say.
Yeah, I'd say that part of Kansas is fairly homogeneous, isn't it? Now, if you look, though, at this graph that we have made, painstakingly, of the winning speed since 2016, there is a very clear trajectory.
An upward trajectory.
It's an upward trajectory, yeah.
So Ted King won the men's race back in 2016. He had an average speed of 17.44 miles per hour. Jones romped round on Saturday at 23.5 miles per hour, which is just under 38 kilometres per hour.
Yeah, and in the women's, the speed has gone from 15.65 miles an hour in 2016, which was won by Amanda Naumann, to 20.12 miles an hour, averaged this year by Migon. And that's despite the fact, we should add, that 3 years ago, the women were finally given a separate start time, weren't they?
Yeah, but we're pointing that out because it basically means they were no longer drafting any of the male competitors, which was quite a controversial topic for a number of years, I remember.
It was, yeah. Now, to add further to the data points, oh yes, Rob Britton averaged over 20 miles an hour for the 350-mile XL event, which is a speed, to remind you, that wasn't attained in the shorter 200-mile race until 2019.
So the obvious question is, what's changed? I guess, how have things got so much faster so quickly?
Well, who better to ask than a former Cervelo test team rider, therefore former teammate of Dan, although, more importantly, he's a double Unbound winner, isn't he? Ted King.
Wouldn't say more importantly, I'd say as well as Unbound winner. Anyway, here's Ted.
Ted, I hope you don't mind me describing you as a veteran of the gravel racing scene, but I was looking back and you started competing at a high level there in about 10 years ago, I think it was at this point. You won Unbound twice in that time, 2016 and 2018. So I thought you'd be the best person to ask about these increasing speeds that we're seeing. What would you put it down to in sort of, you know, first, second and third place for why we're seeing speeds so much faster than just a few years ago?
Oh, man. I think the level of competition would probably be number one. You know, across the board, we see just more and more riders coming in with a tremendous amount of talent. The training, I mean, it's hard not to chalk it up to the training. Back up 10 years ago when I was first getting into this, it was outlandish to think of a 200-mile ride. And now people go in with so much focus around this particular event that was going to be nearly guaranteed. And then, of course, I still pay attention a great deal to the World Tour. So nutrition, you know, I mean, the amount of calories, the amount of carbohydrates people are consuming, it's just, it bodes well so that people are still bringing the speed and have the ability to have energy at the end of a 200-mile race. So it comes down to a sprint. As opposed to, for example, when I first did it, you know, I went on like a 100-mile solo effort. Whereas now it's like, okay, there's a dozen guys coming down to a sprint.
On that nutritional point, I mean, I think there's still quite a few fans that were stung from back in the day having watched pro cycling that feel like the media is kind of pulling the wool over their eyes when it comes to the speed we're seeing in road racing. But you talked about it there. I mean, how much of a difference do you think it has made? And what is the difference in terms of what you're taking? I know you did the XL event this year and you had a few punctures, so it didn't go to plan. But in terms of how your own sort of nutritional intake in a long gravel race has progressed over the years, how does that look?
I mean, that's an interesting conversation unto itself. When I first did the event, 2016, I was getting advice, make sure you spend as little time in the possible as you can in the feed zone, right? And that means, at that point, they were saying, if you're going to sit down, only sit down for a few minutes. Now, of course, we see people practicing their feed zone so that you can go through and spend zero time there. You know, Cameron took, I watched him take two Musette bags and he was off. The precedent of going through a feed zone is going to be particularly high. I understand when a fan would say, is it purely nutrition? And it is crazy the amount of calories and fuel that is being consumed, and I'm experiencing it myself. Like I retired from the World Tour. 2015 was my final year, and that was it was an age 10 years ago before the hyper carbohydrate rage. So I'm experiencing it now in Career 2.0 and gravel. I believe it. I see it, and it's completely true. To backtrack. You asked the 3 points earlier. Another huge one is we're racing directly from the gun. As opposed to, I used to describe the first 25 miles as the most boring hour of racing that you're ever going to experience. Similar to what you see in the World Tour. It's like in a World Tour race, I would call the races a bit scripted. An attack goes, a couple more attacks go, and then the peloton really settles down. And that doesn't happen anymore in World Tour racing, and that's what's keeping a peloton moving at a really high speed when you see the high averages. I think the same thing's happening in these gravel races where, as opposed to no one wanting to show their cards until the first technical section 25 miles in, where previously we'd be averaging 12 miles an hour for that first hour and a half, 2 hours, now people are going right from the get-go. So there are a variety of factors to see that increase in speed, but you know, there's an inevitability that the speed's going to go up as opposed to down.
Yeah, I mean, the standards look so incredibly high right now when you look at the average speed and the average powers, actually. I mean, Cameron, yeah, he uploaded it to Strava and he averaged something like, I think it was 290 watts or something for the 8.5 hours that he was out there. What about equipment? I mean, there's been a lot of talk recently about tyre width and rolling resistance, just like on the road, really. And there was the controversy a few years ago about whether or not you should be using time trial-esque style bars on the front of your bike. How much of a difference would you say helmets and skin suits and internal bladders and the tires and the bike are making?
I mean, I think all incremental gains, certainly to the rider's advantage, it's speeding them up as opposed to slowing them down. Yeah, if you purely believed all the stats, then the aero socks and the internal hydration bladders and all that, you could probably get by with half the watts we were doing previously. But no, I mean, like, the legs are ultimately what's going to speak. Equipment is important, and everybody's trying to think of what little tip and trick they can bring to an event like Unbound that still has a whole number of variables. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's still legs. Who's got the fastest legs and quite a bit of luck.
It is really interesting to hear him talk about how things developed, isn't it? At the point at which he pulled the pin, 350 Ks in to his 350 mile race, he'd averaged close to 20 miles an hour, which is way above his winning speeds from 2016 and 2018.
It is. Of course, he would have been pacing it, thinking that he was going to get to the finish at roughly the same pace. So clearly, there is a lot that's changed. And I think it is worth expanding on a couple of points that Ted made there. There is no doubt that attention to detail when it comes to equipment has played its part, I would say.
Yeah, I'm surprised he said it wasn't as important, you know, because, well, as a case in point, Alex has single-handedly drained every last drop of spirit out of gravel racing by going to a wind tunnel, well, several wind tunnels, actually, ahead of the event to optimise his position and his equipment. He even experimented with a camelback bladder down the front of his skin suit.
A camel front.
As well as the back, sending us a photo that, you know, when you, like, puke a little bit in your mouth.
I remember you saying
I nearly retired from cycling.
Now, clearly, not everybody at the event, even at the front of the event, will have done that. Possibly not even the winners, let's be said. But you can bet that they've all thought very long and very hard about every single piece of equipment that they're going to use on that day, particularly the tyres, I would say, which are another big topic of discussion in the world of gravel at the moment. So just like on the road, it appears that they are getting ever wider.
Yeah. I feel, though, like Ted's point about them racing differently is the big one for me. Now, not chilling for the first hour, that's a big one, isn't it? And then not spending minutes in the feed zone. That blew my mind that they used to do that back in the day. You just think, why?
Well, I don't know why it was like that at the time. No. Anyway, Alex was fortunate to have a lot of help as well from our nutrition partners with Precision Fuel and Hydration, who were there actually helping a number of the competitors at the race. The significantly shorter stops that Ted mentioned, with Jones there, for example, I think are made possible by a much better, more well-drilled support crew than riders had in the past.
Yeah, and a different attitude, right? Mm. Like, I mean, I remember how much, I think it was Peter Stettiner, I'm assuming it was, how much he moaned the year people first turned up with camelbacks and therefore didn't stop in the feed zone.
Probably was him.
Yeah.
He does like to have a moan about something every now and again, doesn't he?
Yeah, although I reckon actually things have got so fast now in gravel that he's stopped moaning, weirdly. Anyway, I think the increased specialism of riders as well, which says played its part, right? So in the initial years, gravel was sort of a supplementary discipline in effect, wasn't it? But now it's something riders concentrate fully on.
Which, of course, means they're fully concentrating on training towards those events too. So a 9 or 10 hour gravel race obviously requires quite a different physiological output than a 4 hour road race.
Yeah, so much steadier, isn't it?
Yeah.
Far fewer bursts of power, but an incredibly high sustained power. So really, you can be a different type of athlete, can't you? Like, Jones uploaded his ride to Strava, and the stats are mind-boggling.
Oh, unbelievable.
So his average power was 290 watts. And then when you take into account, like, it was weighted to 315 on Strava.
He did still have a peak 1 hour, I noticed, of 351 watts.
It's not bad.
Relatively early in the race. That was, I think, when he was going away with the eventual runner-up, Simon Pelaud. He did put a burst in towards the end to drop Pelaud as well. 645 watts for about 45 seconds.
That's not bad after over 8 hours.
No, it's not too bad, is it?
The top two women, unfortunately, didn't upload their power files to Strava. But third place, Lauren Stevens did. Thank you. 189 watts average for 10 and a half hours with a peak hour of 249 watts.
Now, according to my calculations, Si, Jones' FTP is set to about 460 watts on Strava. So that's based on like a 68% intensity score and a weighted average power of 315 watts. Now, I don't know what his weight is, but even if he weighs 100 kilograms...
Which he isn't.
Which he isn't, clearly, it would still be a crazy high FTP,
yeah,
wouldn't
would,
it?
Yeah, and then finally, then, to underline another of Ted's points, nutrition.
Okay, this is the bit where we start to sound like broken records.
Yes, yes, we do. But it's worth stating again, isn't it? So things have come on so much in the last, 5 years
yeah,
or so, when it comes to fueling, and it's clearly making a massive difference, especially in longer events like Unbound.
Do you know what? I'm really annoyed with myself about this whole nutrition thing, I've got to say.
Why is that?
Because I feel like I left no stone unturned when it came to getting the best out of myself back when I was racing, whether that was scientific training or position on the bike or equipment or whatever. I looked into everything.
Yeah.
But it turns out, whilst I turned every stone over, there was a massive rock that I'd left unturned, because it's just so obvious, isn't it? Now, if you give your body more fuel and you train it to use that fuel, you're going to be able to go as fast for so much longer.
Yeah, but don't be so hard on yourself, mate, because nutrition products have also evolved, haven't they? Like, if you had tried to take on 240 grams of carbohydrate in the form that it was in 15 years ago, you'd either have vomited or shat yourself, wouldn't you? So, no, things have definitely evolved.
The evolvement of it has also changed my opinion on a couple of things. So, I think a few years ago, it said something along the lines of winners of gravel races are just the best riders who are currently doing gravel.
Yes.
Right. By which I meant that, for example, a Marianne Vos or a Mathieu van der Poel, if they were to do Unbound at the time, they'd win it, in my opinion. But now, as current gravel world champions, I know that was kind of justified, right?
I feel
because
like
they've
it
become
was, yeah.
gravel world champions on very different courses. But I'm no longer sure that either of them would win an event like Unbound, or at least not without a lot of specific training ahead of that event, because it's just so different and specialist now.
That is a big call, mate. I mean, they are fairly good riders, aren't they?
Yeah, but high-octane riders.
High-octane riders.
I mean, don't get me wrong, they would be up there, and yes, I am already starting to eat my words at this point, but the level...
I mean, cops are coming.
Yes, it's the Mathieu van der Poel and Marianne Vos police coming to get me.
Right, where were we?
Well, I was currently eating my words and being afraid of being arrested by the van der Poel Vos police.
Yes.
But I stick to that. I think it's become so specialist at that top end, I think they would have to train very specifically now to win it.
Yeah. I'd love to see it, for sure. Should we ask Ted now about the spirit of
the
gravel?
The spirit?
Yes, of gravel, I should say, not just the spirit generally.
And in terms of the whole atmosphere around gravel racing, you know, we on GCN have spoken a lot about the spirit of gravel. We've taken the mick a little bit at times. You know, that seems to have changed quite a bit as well. People are taking it more seriously. You know, there's more notoriety there for the winners. There's some money involved, of course, as sponsors, et cetera, as well online. Has it changed it for the better or for the worse? Or what's your opinion on that side of things?
I struggle with that. I don't have a great answer. I mean, I'm certainly on the positive side. There are more eyes on the event. There are more people who are getting into cycling. You know, I think there's 5,000 people at this event, capped out lottery system. And when you go to Emporia and you spend a week in this town and you see how alive it becomes, like, there's something infectious and really exciting about that. And I love that. I think gravel is drawing more people into cycling who would otherwise not ride a bike. You know, they're not going to see a Criterium or a hill climb time trial and get into it. Whereas gravel has this just like gravitational pull. So that is certainly for the positive. The kind of the hell bent level of competition is a tough pill to swallow. The element of teams, I think, is a little bit of a, it's not my favorite aspect. I would still like to see that kind of gritty, individualistic privateer nature to it. But I mean, it's ultimately we get to the point that we're having teams of road racers racing off-road. That's where I think we've kind of lost the plot. But, you know, you talk to everybody on that finish line, regardless of the distance, 200, 350, whether they finished or not, I think 99.9% of people still have fun. And that's what, you know, that's the spirit of gravel right there. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Alex Payton, my colleague, he raced the 200 and he was blown away by the atmosphere around Emporia, like you said. Just a quick one then on your own event. You spoke to me briefly before I started recording, but all going to plan until it wasn't, by the sounds of it.
Yeah. I was in a 5-person break around mile 108 of a 300. We call it the 350. It's actually 360 miles this year. And there are no calories to pick up. Well, let me, quick aside, the XL is completely self-supported. So you don't go through any sort of feed zone. You have to stop at a convenience store. And so there's a convenience store at mile 108. And the next one is not until 200. And so our group of five, which is, it has the eventual winners in it, I just am completely planning to stop at 108. That's the amount of nutrition that I brought. And 10 miles out, I say, okay, we're all stopping, right? And I get a lot of head shakes. But the point being, like, I'm completely flummoxed that they had the calories to go 10 plus hours without a single stop. That speaks to this raised level of competition across the board. That's sort of the gaming of the race, and to have gone in with that level of homework done to know that you can go a 10 hour period without stopping. And of course, you know, it speaks to the speed. We were going 22 miles an hour up to that point. So I watched the race roll away. I was content with, you know, chasing down the top three, and anything can happen. And then over a period of probably 45 minutes or so, I had a whole bunch of flat tires. And I mean, to be honest, I wouldn't change a thing. That's sort of like the element of lady luck at this at Unbound. You can either, I've ridden those exact tires with four successful Unbounds, not a single flat. And then of course I get this whole spate of them. So yeah, you need good legs, you need good luck. And I had the former and still had a really good time.
So no, it appears the spirit isn't dead. It's alive and kicking, but the pros are doing their darndest to suck the last part out.
No, not intentionally, to be fair, are they? I don't think, but just by being pros, you tend to suck enjoyment out of things, don't you? Right, we would love to hear your thoughts, of course, on this. Why do you think gravel racing has got so much faster? And where do you see it stopping?
Also, has the increased professionalism spoiled it for you in any way or destroyed the spirit of gravel? Or are you simply in awe of the performances that we are now witnessing?
Increased what, mate?
Professionalism.
Professionalism, okay. Let us know in the comment section down below.
What did I say the first time?
Professional.
You knew what I meant.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now. I'm going to start with the news that 8 years after Mark Beaumont smashed the world record for riding around the world, plans are afoot for someone to try and break
it. So exciting, isn't it? Step forward, Lael Wilcox. Already the record holder for women, which he set just last year,
yep.
I think it was. On that occasion, she averaged about 180 miles every single day, but she'd need to up that by around 50 miles a day in order to beat Beaumont's record. He covered the 18,000 miles in 78 days, 14 hours and 40 minutes.
Yeah, but if anyone is physically and mentally tough enough to do it, it's Wilcox. So she has a history, doesn't she, of doing what many people thought was impossible.
It really
in
is
cycling ultra endurance world. Yeah.
Yeah. I cannot wait for this. I think she's actually set a date yet, but it's supposed to be at some point next year. And I cannot wait to see how she gets on. There's extra complications now, of course, because of the, I guess, political issues and climate around the globe. So it's going to make navigating it a bit more difficult. But the best of luck. I cannot wait for next year to see how she gets on.
Yeah, I think last time she chose a route that was actually faster than Beaumont's, wasn't it? Because of that. But yeah, I mean, to do it, she is going to have more support. She said she's going to take fewer stops and have less rest.
Oh, it sounds like Unbound.
Basically, yeah. She'll either have to go faster than Mark or sleep less than Mark, won't she, I think? Because I don't think her average speed is higher than his was.
No.
But anyway, we'll see.
Tactics will go out. Anyway, on to the Giro d'Italia now, which wrapped up its 108th edition Sunday in Rome.
In front of Pope Leo the 14th.
It was, actually, there. Wasn't it? Yeah. The final stage is won by Olaf Coy, which is his second at the race, and it ended a brilliant 3 weeks of Visma Lisa bike, who, as we mentioned at the very top of the show, won the overall classification with Simon Yates.
Yeah, they actually won, which would be four races that day. Young sensation Matt Brennan won the final stage, and the overall at the Tour of Norway, his seventh and eighth wins of the season. He's now level with Mads Pedersen. Excuse me, you get me back for professionalism, aren't you? With his most wins so far this year, bear in mind, he's still only 19.
Oh, that's so scary, isn't it? What were you doing at 19 years of age?
I started university and was trying to get into the top 100 in Mountain Bike World Cups.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. What were you doing?
I was window cleaning, I think, at that point, yeah.
I'd almost forgotten. Brilliant. I bet you cleaned windows really
I
well.
Did, really. I was quite meticulous.
Yeah, I bet you were.
Left no stone unturned.
Just a big rock.
Yeah, just smashed the windows. You could see through them perfectly. Right, I have to cut there. Right. Sorry, we went on a bit of a window cleaning tangent.
We did, yeah. Moving on. Elite have released a firmware update, haven't they, that will make many of their older home trainers now compatible with the Zwift Cog.
And that includes those of you who own a first-generation Diretto, Suito or Giusto, which I think is absolutely fantastic. It's so annoying when companies refuse to... I sound old now, don't they?
But
when companies refuse to update their older tech, I guess in an effort to make you buy their newer products.
Yeah. So well done to Elite for that one. Now, moving on to an interesting article that I spotted on the Guardian website, actually, at the weekend. It's a very striking headline, isn't it? Exercise is better than drugs to stop cancer returning after treatment. Trial finds.
Yeah. The results of the trial were recently published in the New England Journal of Medicine, and they showed that structured exercise can reduce the risk of dying by 37%.
It's huge.
It's really, really big,
isn't it? Yeah. It also reduced the risk of recurrent or new cancers by almost a third as well. And close to 900 patients were involved in the study, and it spanned from 2009 to 2023. Experts have said, haven't they, that the findings will drastically change the understanding and importance of exercise during and after cancer treatment.
Yeah, just the power of exercise, eh? It's quite unbelievable. Remarkable, really. Right, on to some news now from us here at GCN. So we always want to hear from you, of course, and we regularly read all the comments that you put underneath our videos or on forms of social media, or even indeed in person, as I found out at the Gralloc. We've also knocked up a quick survey to hopefully make it easier for those quieter members of the GCN community to make your own voices heard as well.
Yeah, so basically, we want to keep making GCN better. And to do that, we need to know what you all want, really. What you think about cycling, about GCN, what you're riding, all of that kind of stuff. So if you could just spare a few minutes, we're assured less than 10 minutes by John Canning.
Oh, Canning said that.
Yeah, right? Just to fill in a questionnaire would be absolutely amazing.
And as a sweetener, we've got a Wahoo Element Ace computer to give away to one person who's going to be chosen at random who completes the survey we've just been talking about.
Yeah. I'm going to fill in the survey, you know,
because I'm eligible for
it. I want to air my grievances about having to work alongside you.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
We have got an HR department, you know.
I know. I don't think the survey covers HR, unfortunately. anyway.
Right, a quick promotion of our GCN shop as well now. So we've got a sale on at the moment, which means you can get 50% off all of our books.
Yeah, that includes the plant-based cyclist, doesn't it? The cyclist cookbook and the fan's guide to pro cycling as well. And there's also a bundle offer where you can get two books and our special edition pink Camelback water bottle.
Brilliant stuff. So head over to shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com or you can simply scan the QR code, which should be on screen hopefully right now. The editor's done their job and knocks me over. Anyway, thanks for your support. It's always very much appreciated.
Yeah. Now, unfortunately, we have to finish Cycling Shorts with some really sad news today, don't we? So former Visma rider Robert Hessing's wife, Daisy, passed away recently after a short illness.
Yeah, there was a moment of silence actually at the start of the final Giro d'Italia stage, which took place in Rome on Sunday, as riders paid their respects to someone who was, looking at the comments on social media, clearly incredibly loved by anyone that met her.
Yeah, so our thoughts are with Robert, their children, Anne and Bram, and everyone who knew Daisy as well.
Unbelievable when I read that news from Robert Hessling online. It's just absolutely devastating. I mean, I never met her, but it just makes you realise how precious life is, really. So stay strong, Robert. The cycling world, I think we all agree, is thinking of you right now.
Yeah, so our condolences too to the friends and family, as well of Ludo Dixons, who passed away last Thursday at the age of 60 whilst riding a charity event in Belgium.
Yeah, he was a bit of a legend, Ludo Dix. When it came to the sport really late, I think it wasn't until he was about 30, maybe 29, that he finally turned professional, having worked up to a factory up to that point. He went on to win a stage of the Tour de France in 1999, which wasn't long after he'd won the Belgian national title.
No, not many riders get to turn pro that late and do that well. So he's clearly a special individual. Rest in peace, Ludo.
Hack, /bodge of the week now. Si's come to work without his laptop.
No, hold on a minute. I didn't think it was sensible to bring a laptop onto a beach. Yeah. Although I do have screen envy currently.
Yeah, well, I did offer to share my laptop with Si if he withdrew his complaint to HR, but he refused and said he was going to use his phone. Anyway, first up, Richard Moe. Because of the crappy options regarding bike transports and trains in Central Europe, I had no chance for days to travel back from Germany to Austria with my bike. So a colleague and I had to get creative. If there's no space for a bike, just travel with luggage in a bike shape.
This is cool.
Remove the wheels, pedals and rear derailleur and covered everything with very compact with around 80 metres of cling film wrap and old cardboard. So you don't have to buy a bike ticket and your bike survives the journey just fine.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say, that's a hack as far as I'm concerned. And I say that partly because as a train user in the UK, I feel your pain about bike provisions. So that, like, any way of effectively getting one over, I'm all for.
80 metres of cling film.
Not environmentally perhaps the best thing to do, but no, that's a hack from me.
Okay, well, it's a hack from me as well. I would never have thought of that idea in my life.
No, not at all. Right, next up, this one from Mike R. Here's a hack for you, he says. Why not save up all your P0 tyre bands and sell them to an F1 fan? Oh my goodness. So, for context, right, if you buy a Pirelli P0 tyre, it's held together with a very nice, fancy kind of like thick rubber, like bracelety type thing. And they come in different colours. And so here you go.
But you can buy them, I think is his point, if you go onto the sort of motor racing side of things for £13.50.
For five?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, all you need to do is buy five Pirelli tyres, save them up, put them on eBay. eBay, should I say?
Not a great discount, really, when you think about it. No. But still, no, I like that. I mean, are we saying that's a hack?
Oh, no, I'm going bodge.
Oh, are you? Why?
I don't know, really.
I was going to get bodge. Right, come on then.
Linda wrote in to say, I've moved, lost a garage and gained a small summer house. I used an old curtain pole left behind in my new home and repurposed it to hang my helmets.
Oh, that looks neat, doesn't it?
Does look neat, yeah, if you can reach up far enough to clip them together.
That's a lot of helmets as well, isn't it?
Yeah, you can only use one helmet at a time, Linda.
I like that very much, but that is an awful lot of helmets. I suppose you can't ever be too safe, but no, I think that's wicked. That's a hack from me.
That's a hack from me as
well. Repurposing old curtain rails, brilliant. Nick Sorensen. Do you think that's the Nicky Sorensen?
But I doubt it.
Probably. Okay, well, just in case. I've been struggling to find a good place to set my phone to run my Wahoo System workouts. I balanced it on the Wahoo mount, but it kept falling off. Yeah, I do that as well, unfortunately. I didn't want to make any permanent modifications to my phone with a stick-on Wahoo mount, so I printed a phone tray instead. As an added bonus, I can mount it horizontally or vertically, and it's big enough to play a game of cards on, or on particularly long sessions, even eat dinner. I mean, it is really remarkably large.
Yeah, I wonder what sort of dinner, spaghetti bolognese on that.
I tell you what, if you had a phone that was big enough to fit that, you wouldn't have any problems like this, would you? That's amazing.
I also rest my phone on my Wahoo mount, and it fell off a few months ago, and I thought I got away with it, but it happened to fall on one of the feet of the Wahoo bikes I was using, and it just... I've got four camera lenses on the back of my phone.
Four?
Yeah, I don't know why. Well, I couldn't figure out what it had done, because every camera I use, video, slow motion, still photos, everything, it seemed to work perfectly still. But it's on like the zoom out function.
Right.
You know, well, the kids do, where they like doing all the selfies riding along with the
zoom. Oh, is that why you can't do cool selfies?
Right. I was actually a bit gutted when I realised what it was. Anyway, moving on, because we've actually got 5 days at Hacker Abroad.
Oh, it's a hack. It's 3D printed, isn't it?
I'm going to say hack as well. Richard Taylor, while out in New York recently, one of the riders had somewhat of a self-made malfunction on his seat. When rebuilding his bike after transit, he failed to check the little things. Early in the ride, one of the other riders had a puncture in his tubeless tyre. Unrepairable, he took out the valve and replaced it with a tube. 5 miles down the road, we heard a ching of metal bouncing down it.
Uh-oh.
Thinking nothing of it, as there was a lot of stuff on the road, we carried on. Stopped at a junction and it revealed what had happened. So the rider went to sit back down in the saddle, only to find it came away from the seat post.
Ooh.
After numerous attempts to somewhat hold the seat on with tape, tie wraps, and even a piece of metal fencing from the local field, a thought popped up. Let's try the tubeless valve. After all, it resembles a bolt and has a nut of sorts. It fitted perfectly. 50 miles later, back at the hotel, was replaced with a more substantial nut and bolt from a Chinese hardware store, as Pinarello Mallorca were very unhelpful and wanted to sell Mark a complete seat post. Bolt and clamp have now been replaced for £8.
Oh, my word. That image... Fair play. I mean, that's absolutely incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is, like, genuinely an amazing roadside hack.
It is. Again, I would never have thought of that. And it's definitely a hack from me, because it looks quite sturdy.
It does.
Doesn't it?
Why would you take your seat off to fly?
I don't know.
That's a weird one.
I want to point that out.
Yeah, OK. All right. Now, I'm going to say that's a hack, then.
Hack from me as well.
You never know when you might need two things like that.
No.
Ingenuity is key.
I'm trying to think. I was trying to find a bolt on my bike that would fit somewhere else the other day, but I've completely forgotten what it was for.
That's a cool story.
That's one of the worst stories amongst many really terrible stories that I've told on the T-Center. I'll get back to you later on.
Oh, my God, there's a bar just there.
Yeah, but that's why I can't think properly.
Desperate to go there. Oh, Christ, right.
What was I doing?
What bolt did you want?
I can't remember now what I was doing.
It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle.
An imaginary coveted
GCN
unfortunately, Camelback water bottle.
As well as not bringing my laptop to the beach, I forgot to bring a Camelback water bottle.
You had two jobs.
Yeah, yes. Anyway. We'll do results first, won't we?
We will, from 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
We were lazy last week, pre-recorded, and then went on holiday. Last 2 weeks ago, the photo was Lewis Askey doing this celebration over the finish line of a race. Our winner this week is Arthur Livesley, who put, Lewis raises an arm and a leg to show how much a decent bike costs nowadays.
Costs I sort of see that. Oh, I see. Okay, got it. That's a good one, Arthur. Well done. Get in touch and we will get your GCN Camelback water bottle over to you. What is our photo for this week, Dan?
Our photo this week is from the final stage of the Giro d'Italia in Rome, where Red Bull sent one of their Formula One cars, attached a bike to the top of it, and then did some, what do you call them, donuts?
Donuts.
Donuts.
That's pretty cool, isn't it? I didn't realise they'd done that.
I will get you started. Red Bull immediately regret letting Roglic loose in their Formula One car as he's forced to abandon qualifying despite a clear display of power.
I know where you're getting with that one. I think.
Well, it looks like he's crashed it.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah, get it.
Okay.
Got it.
A bit long-winded.
Yeah, it was a little bit.
Better.
Good job, you got it first take there.
Yeah.
If you want to enter the caption competition, remember, all you got to do is put a witty caption in the comment section down below and we'll pick a winner next week.
And if you don't get it right first time, you can't edit it.
Yeah. I mean, technically, there's nothing to stop you entering multiple times.
No, there's not.
No, we've never talked about that before, but multiple entries are okay.
We will shortly let you know what's coming up on the channel over the next week or so. But first up, a few of our favourite comments from last week's videos. Starting with last week's show, We Need to Talk About Arsehole Cyclists was the title of that one. Paul wrote in, say, as a professional truck driver with a motorcycle licence that drives a car and rides a bike that also knows how to walk, I've learned not to be an arsehole on the roads.
Yeah. I guess then saying that it's not about your mode of transport, it's, as we said, an asshole is an asshole.
Yeah.
No matter what your mode of transport. Yeah, yeah. Hopefully so, Paul. Hopefully so. And then Idaho Fat Tire Bike Fun wrote in to say, oh, both Si and Dan do excellent duck impressions. We f***ing well do, don't we, Dan?
Yeah. F***ing hell we do, yes. Isaac bleeped out a load of swear. We were potty mouthed, I think, last week, weren't we?
We were a little bit, yeah.
Thanks to Isaac for that. Meanwhile, underneath my secret weapon for Unbound, which was Alex talking about his heat training ahead of the event, Jeffrey Williams wrote in, so the puddle under your bike, you're clearly channeling your inner Psy.
Jeffrey, clearly you've been watching GCN for many a year, and I thank you for that. But,
I think he surpassed you, if I'm honest.
As in the sweat, right?
Things have come on so much over the last 5 years. So.
It's just he was wearing cycling kit and therefore it's acceptable. It's when you're wearing casual
true.
T-shirts that it's less so, isn't it? But yeah, no, thanks for the reminder. Andy Wolford said, Alex, please be careful. Your sweat might corrode the drawer full of Dura Ace chain sets. I don't think it will it? They're aluminium.
Yeah, I don't know how old he goes up to. Well, they're always aluminium. Imagine some of the chain rings used to be steel, but anyway.
Yeah, maybe.
Underneath, I accidentally qualified for the UCI Gravel World Championships. Might not have to do it unless the video gets 10,000 likes. Rudy wrote and said, that Van der Poel laydown and Rob Hatch comes behind it. Absolute gold. Yeah, what a legend Rob Hatch was doing that for us.
Yes.
Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, mid-Giro, presumably.
Yeah, there you go.
Just like he was
quite a busy man at the time.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. And then High Pike said, great to see Dan at the Gralic. That completes my spring trilogy of encountering GCN presenters during April and May. Ollie at the Dirty Reaver riding party pace with mates. He said Alex was somewhere at the front in a different time zone. Then Ollie and I at the Fred Witten coming past you somewhere in West Cumbria. And finally, there's Dan at the Gralic. Who knew? And then this was really nice for him to say. One thing I'll say is they're not just great cyclists, but also they're nice people, finding time to chat to everyone. Presumably you didn't try talking to Ollie during the Fred Witten because he did not have much time.
Yeah, it was hard to get much chat out of him for the video, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, but actually, do you know what? It's been so cool. Like, well, it's always cool going to events, isn't it? But it's been really cool, particularly meeting so many people this year. I don't know, it feels more than normal. So thank you, everyone, who comes up and says hello.
It was lovely at the Gravic, should I say. Hey, Tico said, Dan using Slay and Lit wasn't on my 2025 bingo list, but here we are, LMAO. I know what that means.
Do you? Yeah.
That's how down with the kids I am.
You're almost cool, Dan, apart from the fact that you can't do a proper selfie with the, like, extra...
Because
the wide-angle lens.
Camera. Invest in a new one.
And then Connor's video from Sunday about the potential risks of riding with high cholesterol, which super interesting vid, that. Us757 said, 4 years ago, I died of a sudden cardiac arrest the day after running a half marathon. Incredibly, a retired cardiologist was at the scene and between him and my wife kept me going until the rescue squad arrived and revived me with the paddles. Turned out a piece of plaque separated from an artery wall and shorted out my heart. Oh my goodness.
Mm.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
The doctor said it wasn't what I ate 30 days ago, it's what I ate 30 years ago. By the way, I'm 70 years old now. Wowzers.
Yeah. Yeah, there's incredible comments underneath that video.
Yeah.
If you haven't already watched it, I would thoroughly recommend doing so. It's very interesting indeed. Right then, coming up on the channel this week, on Friday, it's the next episode in Connor's Everyday Heroes. So you might remember Naomi and Rosa from the last one. Is this the one where they did 50 miles?
It is the one they did 50 miles. In between, can I say, they did a time trial. They did an evening test.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing. And we were too busy filming us being idiots and missed out on that genuine... story, but no, Connor took them out for a proper epic bike ride.
And the weather wasn't great, was it? So, I mean, we're doing everything we can to put them off, like two up time trials and rides in bad weather, but we'll see how they get on, whether they come back for more or not. And then on Sunday, you've been doing a video about resistance to fatigue.
Basically, it's the cycling superpower that no one knows about. And anyway, I went and talked to one of the absolute leading sports physiologists on this subject. He kind of spearheaded this interest in the subject. Took a deep dive into it. I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah,
well, so hopefully you lot think so too.
I better watch that if I'm going to have a chance at winning the World Championships for the 45 to 49 age group this October.
Woo! Hit that like button, folks. Yes. I want to see what else you can do. Like, after you win the World Championships.
Unbound.
Now, there's an interesting thought.
Oh, the XL? The old Unbound XL?
No. I mean, you said it.
No.
I was thinking the 200.
I'm just trying to wrap the show up so I can get to this bar that I've been looking at.
But it is getting dark, isn't it?
Yeah, let's go. Thanks for watching.